You're listening to the Do Gooders podcast. What is peace and how do we build it? How can we create a shared future where everybody belongs? Today on the show, Monica Kirka talks about peace and why it involves all of us, why we're all responsible to solve violence, and why power is found in relationship. Monica founded Activate Labs, a nonprofit organization that builds a creative force for peace and justice. Her projects bring together the ingredients for joy to enable direct, structural, and cultural peacebuilding. As a refugee herself and someone who holds two master's degrees in sustainable international development and conflict and coexistence, Monica is perfectly poised to help us pursue a lens of peace. Allow me to introduce to you today Monica Kirka.
You're listening to the Do Gooders podcast, a show from the Salvation Army's Caring magazine, where we firmly believe that good starts with you. We get it. Life is busy, and we know you want to do good, but squeezing another thing into the to-do list is hard. Idea organizer, truth seeker, and good infuser Kristen Thiem will introduce you to people just like you who are doing good right where they are, so you can be inspired to make your world a better, brighter place. Listen in on honest conversations for actions you can take to do good today. Here's your host, Caring Magazine editor, Kristen Thiem.
Hey, do-gooder. Your voice, your story matters. Want to know more? Get the free Find Your Story email course at caringmagazine.org. That's caringmagazine.org to find your story today.
Monica, thank you so much for being here on the Do Gooders podcast.
Thank you for having me.
So can you just start out by telling us a little bit about who you are and what you do and how you came to do the good that you do in the world?
Yeah, thanks. So my name is Monica Kirka, and I call myself a peace builder, a facilitator, but I also would consider myself in the work we do as a community building, community organizing. So covering all of those three areas, we do it through the channel of Activate Labs. I founded Activate Labs a few years ago. It's the iteration of, I would say, the last 20 years of work. And what our hope is to create communities where everybody belongs. And we do that through moving people that are in spaces of trauma and conflict towards a shared collective creative future. And that we do that through design. So we co-create with the communities we work with. We facilitate those spaces. How I started this work is I actually am a refugee from Romania myself, and our family came. My parents were very involved in the underground church in Romania. Maybe the audience has heard of Brother Andrew, and they were involved in transporting Bibles and even, you know, things about democracy. And you know, unfortunately, the Romanian government didn't appreciate that. And so after time in prison, torture, and just being part of a greater community that has suffered, our family came to the United States. And while we were so grateful to come, I think early on I saw, even as being, white immigrants, I just saw how belonging was such a challenge and how of social exclusion was still an issue that we had to face. And so that early on, reminded me that being part of a community is going to take work. And that's what my work has become is really, I would say, returning to myself, right? So much was lost in the refugee process and to leave our family and home behind and to be able to come here and start a new life and freedom. But yet a lot of our identity was lost. So building communities where everybody longs in this effort to build socially inclusive societies is, I think, a very personal effort, but also it's something that I think I see has impact on a global scale.
Right. Absolutely. And I love that idea that looking to create a future where everybody belongs in a shared future. Can you talk a little bit more about, ideally, what would that look like?
Right. I think conflict happens. So conflict is when sides of something don't see eye to eye. Violence happens when the response is hurt, or oppression happens when the response is, injustice. And so conflict is natural and normal. And I think that we have different pasts and different histories is natural and normal, right? This is how the world has spread out across many countries, and we have different cultures, different languages. And so we might see things different. But I think when we see things different and hurt each other and exclude and kill each other and maim and all these, very disparate histories, how do we create a shared future? That's something. And so what we think of a shared future is not something like we have to, all live together in a house. but the idea of having a future that involves all of us, a future that includes all of us. future that includes police and communities that have been hurt by police, future that includes in the Hutus and the Tutsis in Rwanda. You know, what does that look like as opposed to winner takes it all mentality? And I think that's usually what has happened in peace and conflict work is winner takes it all. And a shared future says, no, I think, you know, the idea of peace is not, you know, just a pie that can't be split. And there's only so many resources that we can use our, we call it moral imagination. We can use our creativity to find solutions that we thought weren't even there. And really the shared future needs to be created by those that are impacted by the conflict or by the violence. So for example, in Colombia, we have a project where we work with ex-combatants and victims together. And together they co-created a project where they are peace tour guides. So not only are we looking to restore and reconcile relationships with each other over, you know, a 50-year war that has killed so many people, but also with the land. How do we work together to restore our relationship with the land? To, you know, the land felt the blood spill. You know, how do we ask the land for forgiveness and return ourselves back to, you know, just even appreciating God's creation? And so we invite those impacted to even do that, right? And to bring other people into the shared future story. And so that's the kind of work we do where it's very active and very applied, but it's really imagining a future that involves everybody. So I would say collective rather than shared is probably even a better way to say it.
Okay, gotcha. Can you take a step back for a second? You're engaged in this work of building peace and finding ways through conflict, but can you take a step back and give us an overview of what do you think the state of peace in the world is today?
Yeah, I mean, peace is nuanced. And so, you know, I think it's easy right now. It's easy to say, you know, yes or no, this or that. But I think what peace is the state where violence is not. And so I think we have to define violence to understand what peace is. And so for me, violence, not for me, and for many peace builders, Johann Galtung used a matrix of considering the direct violence, structural violence, and cultural violence. So peace is where there's no direct violence, which is, you know, killing each other and rape and war and this very physical violence that we could see, feel, touch. That kind of violence prevents peace, but also structural violence. And structural violence is where laws and policies, maybe institutions, systems are in place that benefit the few at the expense of the many. And it could be race-based. It could be gender-based. There could be a lot of reasons why these laws exist. And we see them with, you know, the Rome in my country, Romania, or we see them with, you know, the redlining in the Jim Crow era. And even now, a lot of the effects of how we treat Black people or Latinos or immigrants in this country. But then there's another layer that's called, you know, cultural violence. And that really happens in the symbolic and in the narrative space. So I always say, you know, how many people has the MAGA hat killed? Well, not very many people, but it means something to people and it shows something. You know, how many people has Black Lives Matter killed? Well, not very many people, probably nobody, but it affects people and it makes people, it riles them up because words have meaning. And so we want to make sure that we honor that the symbolic and the narrative realm too. And so when there's conflict, we don't just look at people fighting. We look at all the way of what are the factors, actors, the dynamics, what causes that, what's underneath. So peace is where we have reconciliation and a restoration in cultural violence, when we have it in laws and policies that represent the many, and also in how we treat each other, in the physical and the very palpable violence in our communities and in our world.
Yep, words definitely have meaning, and I like that. And that's a great definition of peace, that where violence is not, it's pretty clear. So can you tell me a little bit more about how you work to build peace with Activate Labs? And you mentioned that you use creativity. What role does creativity have in building peace?
Yeah. So we have a design process, and before we can co-design, you know, with two or three or five, 10 sides of a conflict that, you know, already have a lot of stereotypes and a lot of misunderstanding, a lot of ideas about each other. Mm-hmm. You know, how do we create, and we don't really create safe spaces. We call them brave spaces or courageous spaces, right? How do we create these spaces where people can enter in and start, you know, creating a shared or a collective future? And a lot of that happens through creativity. And so when we can be creative, when we can be open and vulnerable, and by that, I it could be music, dance, art, theater. When we create these spaces that those that are impacted by violence or oppression, they can come in and release the trauma that they have, release those stories in a place that they're, it's a container that they're going to be they're going to be safe, but they're also going to get a chance to engage with the other. And so I think creativity brings things to a different level than, let's say, dialogue. Many people do mediation, dialogue. Sometimes in Christian circles, we use the word peacemaker a lot. And peacemaker is really resolving a conflict, right? And so it's like taking two sides or three sides or how many sides of a conflict and having people talk it out. Creativity is another level of engagement where it's saying, yes, of course, like dialogue and these stories and this is very important, but there's parts of our body, of our hands and feet and of our heart that when they're not engaged, it's just our brain and our mouth and our ears that are engaged, you know, just two senses, three senses, we're leaving a huge side of ourselves behind. So we look at more of the embodied practices. So just to give you an example, we went down to Mexico to help with the humanitarian crisis of the migrant caravan. And we joined Sojourners and other, you know, faith-based groups, Matthew 25 here in Los Angeles, and groups that are doing, you know, faith-based groups that are doing social justice work. And we brought something that we call rapid response creative trauma healing spaces. And so while there's the legal routes, you know, people, lawyers and legal support, and then there's the humanitarian people feeding people, we said, you know, who's feeding the soul? Who's taking care of people's souls in the middle of a trauma? Or whatever side of any, you know, political sphere you might be on, we can definitely say that people fleeing their home are traumatized. And people that are living in a huge tent, sleeping on the floor with, you know, hundreds of people are experiencing trauma. Walking, you know, 11 hours a day. And so how do we support them? And so we brought art and music and face painting and karaoke and dance parties. And we just let the group self-define. So we call it, we just bring the ingredients for joy. And many times the groups wanted to do praise music. That fed their soul. Sometimes it was dance parties. We let the group use these ingredients, whether it's a karaoke machine or whether it's art and painting and face painting. You know, many wanted to do their flags, right? Just some kind of remembering home. We made huge banners they were coloring books made out of banner material and have people that can color in and have messages to each other and messages to their family. And people can use markers to color in and to share messages. We did participatory videos, so where people were able to create their own narratives and their own stories and be their own media resource. So these ways go beyond dialogue or beyond peacemaking as a process, but more goes to, you know, who gets to own your own story? How do you get to express yourself? I mean, and, you know, using creativity to do that. And I'll just tell you one quick story. We were in McAllen, Texas, which was considered July. And it's, you know, it's considered the Ellis Island of today. You know, thousands of migrants are crossing our southern border, and they're coming out of the ICE detention. Families are, and they're going to the Catholic Charities Respite Center, and they basically are getting fed and they go off to their families and all over the United States. And so there's just, you know, hundreds of migrants that are coming, and they spent, you know, 4 days in what we call the Yelera, which is an ice box. So they're hungry, they're tired, they're weary, they're scared. And there was this 5-year-old boy that came, and, you know, he probably hadn't eaten well in a few days, and he got pizza. Usually pizza is the easiest meal to feed hundreds of people. And they, he's holding the pizza, and then he saw our banners that are like coloring books. And he's just looked at it and he said, "Whoa." And then he handed me his pizza and he just picked up a marker and started coloring. And that experience really made me question the whole Maslow's triangle of human needs, right? I mean, his self-expression in art was way higher for him than eating, than taking care of his body. His mind was also, his soul was also needing to be fed. And so I think that time and time again showed me that people's resilience and people's hope was just as important as eating. And that's what art and creativity can do.
It's incredible.
Are you trying to figure out which cause to get behind in the fight for good? Head to caringmagazine.org and take the What's Your Cause quiz to find out. Then join in and do good. That's caringmagazine.org to take the quiz today.
So you do a lot of these creative projects. What's the flip side of that, of how you're leading people or facilitating people toward a better understanding of peace and building peace? As far as the workshops that you lead and trying to help people better understand how we can all build peace.
Right. Yeah. So I think, you know, recently I did an online webinar for a nonprofit, and it was, you know, speaking to people that haven't experienced a lot of trauma and people that haven't experienced a lot of violence, and helping them analyze and see it in how they define it. Let's just say, in how we, you know, normally we define it as very physical, very palpable violence. Mm-hmm. And so they would consider themselves, you know, kind of violence free, but giving people tools to really analyze their society and what's going on. So as I say, like, everybody's involved in violence, whether we support it, whether we ignore it, whether we experience it, whether we do it, we can't, if we live in this planet, we can't get away from it. And so we're all responsible to solve it too. And so giving those that are, you know, maybe don't see themselves as involved, giving them tools to analyze, to really understand a conflict, to understand their situation, to understand laws and policies, to understand, you know, how the city works, how our communities work, who gets the power, right? Who gets to talk for you? Who gets to vote for you? Who gets to get things done for you? That's how power works. And so giving people some kind of analysis tools, I think, is very powerful. I can tell you, we work with, in Northern Mexico, we trained over 1,000 women in our process. It's called the frame design process. And, you know, many of them are just community people, right? They weren't necessarily activists, or they're not peace builders. They're just community people. And there was a few community leaders in the group, you know, this 1,000. They were in 8 communities. And one woman had, you know, as many in Mexico are, you know, had lived in a lot of poverty. And so this, as we were doing an analysis of it, you know, she just started weeping. And she just started saying, you know, I've been so ashamed of my poverty. My sister will come from the United States and kind of mock my poverty. And now it's like, I can see that it's not only not just my fault, like I can't work any harder, but it's also there's a reason, and there's people that are benefiting, and there's a whole system in place. And so I think there's a lot of, let's say, reprieve and hope when we have an analysis. I would also just add, with our workshops, we really want to equip and train those that are doing this work to be able to carry it to other spaces. And so what we've done is we've created a process where they can train others. The women that we trained in Mexico are actually now just by themselves self-started. They started working in a high school in Tecate, Mexico, in Northern Mexico. And so they're actually teaching others. And they were on the news the other day because of their work. And this is a self-initiative. I didn't even know about it until they told me. And so for people to be able to scale and to build on how to analyze conflict, how to understand how power works, and also how to use some tools like nonviolent communication and dialogue skills to be able to kind of start getting through the violence and working towards a shared future.
So when you look at an organization like the Salvation Army, what impact do you think that kind of group could have on building peace, and what would you encourage it to do collectively?
The Salvation Army has an amazing opportunity. I mean, any kind of frontline organization or frontline community has an opportunity to impact peace. One of our principles in Activate Labs is that the power is in the relationship. Mm-hmm. And if you have the relationship, then you really have power. You can influence people. You can support people. And I think that's where the Salvation Army is deeply, being so embedded in communities and also really understanding the very localized needs is very powerful. And that's that you need that to be able to do any kind of analysis or any kind of engagement. I mean, without trust, we always say that, you know, trust always walks before the process. So if you need trust before you can have any kind of process, whether you want to do education or change or whatever you want to do, you need to build trust first. Mm-hmm. And I think organizations like Salvation Army have built that trust. And so then the question is, how do we leverage that trust to scale it towards more systemic change, or change that can affect, you know, a whole community rather than maybe just like an after-school program for kids or for one or two kids. So I think one way a group like Salvation Army is to see themselves as part of a system. And I think that's something that many, I think, even the church as a whole, the body of Christ, right, that we're part of a system. Mm-hmm. And even that's how the body of Christ is described, right? The arm and the leg and the head and the neck. And so what system is each congregation part of, right? Is each core part of? Where are we? What's our city? What's our community? Who's involved? So I think first understanding what our role is and where we are and how we can support. The second I would say is to do a real analysis of violence. What's happening in our communities? What's happening in our organization? You know, what is the direct violence? What is the structural violence? What is the cultural violence that those that we love are experiencing or ourselves are experiencing? Once we do an analysis, then we start looking at ideating some solutions. So that's where the creativity comes in place, whether we prototype or we work together to better understand how each of us would imagine peace. I could tell you in Colombia, what we did is we just used like Tinker Toys. So when we are building out an idea of a tour, you know, what does a tour look like? We literally use Tinker Toys to build out a tour. So they, you know, with Play-Doh and spaghetti, they're showing where they would take tour, you know, take tourists to go on a trip and what part of our, you know, what part of the violence or part of the history they would show tourists. And so really just prototyping in a very concrete way, right? Is this a community center? What would bring peace here? Community center. Would it be a dialogue of racial justice group talking about human trafficking? I'm talking about immigration. What are the hurts and pains in our community and where can we support? And after the ideation, then we would co-design. And so the co-designing happens with community. The whole process actually happens with those in mind, but really just co-designing and implementing that. And then the last part of our design thinking process is really just reflection, right? Always reflecting on who's getting impacted, who's getting touched by this, whose life is changing, how can we expand that, how can we maximize it. And so all these ways are how Salvation Army or any institution can kind of embed themselves as they are in their community, but also use that as a leverage, as kind of a lever to see how can we scale, how can we expand it, and how can we even benefit from our trust that we have in the community to be able to help them, you know, raise their voice and get to a different place.
And then drilling down from that, somebody within the Salvation Army, elsewhere, somebody who might be really sparked by this idea and wanting to build peace, what's a tangible action step somebody could take today to start moving in this direction?
Well, I mean, I think actually having relationships is very tangible. So it depends on what they would like to do. I think, you know, being involved in community and hearing the stories from those, I always say, you know, many times as a church and as people, we believe that, you know, proximity to power will help us progress, but it's really proximity to the pain. And so the question is, you know, what is our proximity to the pain? How close are we to those folks? How close do we, what, you know, how, it's basically incarnational ministry. You know, how do we really live out the gospel? And as I call it, the Calvary Road, how do we live that out each day? So at first I would say, you know, get to know people that are, you know, the other, the lonely, the misfits, the people that are left out. And it's not going to be comfortable and it's not going to be, you know, great. So that could happen, depends on what you're interested in. You know, there's many groups that work with immigrants. There's many groups that work with refugees. And I know you're, you know, Salvation Army also has a social justice network. Mm-hmm. So as opposed to social justice, what peace building is going to do, social justice, if we do like an analysis, kind of works on the structural violence, right? On laws, policies, organizing, and it uses the lens of changing things through a systemic change in the system. Peace building is going to try to affect all three. And so it's going to look at the cultural violence in our communities, right? Who's getting left out of processes? So that could look like civic engagement. That could look like getting out the vote. I mean, it could be that simple. Or it could look like, you know, attending an iftar. You know, the Ramadan's coming soon. You know, attending your local iftar or attending the mosque, getting to know the Muslim community in your neighborhood. These kind of things where you build relationships, you understand who's there. And then I believe as we sit in relationship with people, we can listen to them and we can find ways to be able to find a solution together. So I think understanding each other and then understanding, I mean, the differences are going to come. So understanding what our differences are. Peace building happens in community. And so that's why I think as a person, you could definitely do it, but this is not like a Lone Ranger sport. Mm-hmm. We need to do it together in community. I know there's interfaith dialogues in many places, but without being engaged in a community with the other, with foster care, with lonely people, with homeless, then it's, you know, honestly, it is really difficult to do it because we're going to kind of just, I know many people, you know, talk about like sit in our comfort zones. And peace building also happens when we like, you know, through touch, like when we engage and we actually have contact with others. Many people, as we see, you know, they feel like to avoid conflict, they just avoid people. And so that's probably true, right? We can live in our bubbles and not really engage with the hurting. But I don't think that helps us. And also that kind of denies the fact that we are part of a system and that whether we ignore it or not, that we are either causing it or impacted by it or around it. And not just for us, but for our children, for the next generation. You know, I think this world, you know, needs people that have a lens of peace and can also see the peace as something that needs to be mainstreamed. You know, peace in our schools, we see bullying, we see kids, you know, committing suicides, little kids, because they're being bullied. You know, on social media, you see so much violence happening, or even gun violence in our community. All of these things are impacting our kids, are impacting us, and we can't deny I. And so I think being aware, getting engaged, and then figuring out like, what's your role, right? Is your role to support? Is your role to just be a friend? I can't tell you how many people, you know, their lives were changed because somebody befriended them and was there for them. So that's more of like direct violence. For structural violence, you could get involved in your community, get involved, you know, get civically engaged, get to become an active citizen in your community. And then the cultural violence is what I was mentioning, going to the mosque, meeting with immigrants, understanding the issues that our communities get impacted and really hearing the stories of people that are impacted.
So much to think about here and a lot of really great tips and better understanding as we pursue that lens of peace, like you mentioned. So finally, where can people find and connect with you online? And are there any resources that you would point to for further learning on this topic?
Yeah, well, we're at www.activatelabs.org. You can just go to activatelabs.org. We're also on Facebook at Activate Labs and Instagram and Twitter. And because we use narrative change, we are on a lot of social media. Mm-hmm. But also we're going to be launching workshops and training, and we're also working with Salvation Army to do that. Mm-hmm. And so through the Salvation Army, we'll be providing resources and support for the pastors to be able to be trained in our process, and so that they can also take it to their cores. I think those are really, really important to have people that are trained in the process. As far as resources, there's so many great resources about engagement, but also just there's groups that take people, you know, into visits and kind of do the first line engagement. I know there's groups that do different types of peace building that are faith-based. I think what we're trying to see is how we can do peace building, not just, I think there's many groups that do travel-based peace building where they just take people to go see the other, mm-hmm. whether it's, you know, in travel trips. I don't know if we need that. I think, you know, I think there's groups in our own communities that are doing it. So I could provide some resources, or people can reach out to me and we can provide some more resources. We have some training guides coming out and how to just get more educated. I really like John Paul Lederach as an author. He's a Mennonite, and he describes the essence, I would say the essence of a peace builder. And he uses the idea of the moral imagination, right? So we already know what is, you know, can we co-create together what isn't yet? And so he's a really great resource. Yeah, there's also the Alliance for Peace Building, and has many, many peace building organizations that are a part of it. They're based in DC.
Perfect.
Yeah. And so there's a lot of resources out there. It really depends on what people are specifically looking for. And I'd be happy to field any, you know, emails that people are interested in. They can reach me at monica@activatelabs.org, and I can share more resources via email.
Perfect. So that gives us a great starting point as well. Monica, thank you so much for your time today and sharing more about how you're building peace.
Thank you very much.
And to those of you listening, thank you for tuning in to the Do Gooders podcast. If you enjoyed today's show, head over to caringmagazine.org to find the show notes for today and to find more goodness. See you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Do Gooders podcast. Find the show notes for this episode and all past episodes at caringmagazine.org/podcast. And if you love the show, would you share it with a friend? We'll see you next time, Do Gooder.